concepts together like you did with the presidents. Let me get you started. Let's use a tree to remember the key concepts. Why a tree? Because it represents growth for me and it's in your long-term memory. Imagine the roots, laughing, and intelligent people. You can imagine Einsteins are sitting at the base of the tree. Imagine children hugging the trunk of the tree, affection of children. And on the branches you can imagine a nest, honest, full of critics. You'll notice that we've connected the first few key words to your system, and with a bit of repetition you'll have it all in place. If you choose, you can continue to connect the rest of the information to the leaves, thorns, and the fruit, or to a park where the tree is planted. Once you have the key concepts, then you need to read through the material a few times. The key words will make the text stickier, and your knowledge of English will help you to remember the syntax. Make the material come to life, and you'll remember more. My friend, the late, great Creighton Carvello, memorized Ernest Hemingway's novel, The Old Man and the Sea, and each word's numerical position. For example, you might have asked him the sixth word on line 15 of page 8, and he could have named it. He did not use rote learning, he used a method similar to the one I've just shown you. Like with anything in life, it takes a bit of practice to be able to remember text with ease. When you master this, you'll be able to remember any information that you need for your business or your life word for word. Actors have also successfully used this method to remember their lines. When you really know the information, you can feel and act it out more comfortably as well. Lesson 2. Presenting from memory. The human brain is a wonderful organ. It starts working as soon as you're born and doesn't stop until you get up to deliver a speech. That's a quote from George Jessel. Do you enjoy watching a presentation where the presenter hides behind a piece of paper or a screen and reads all the information to you? No, you want to see a human being making eye contact and communicating freely. The purpose of any presentation is to get your audience to understand, believe, and act on what you say. If you, as a presenter, can't remember your own content, how's your audience meant to remember it? If they can't remember it, they're not going to believe or act on it. Many people are afraid of public speaking. I believe that the fear has a lot to do with fear of forgetting information. Many people say I might hit a blank. The methods that you've already learned in this book will provide you with a solution. If you work with the methods, you'll never blank out again. I've been giving professional presentations for 15 years now, and the last thing on my mind is the fear of forgetting information. When I present, I use the memory strategies, and the information is always there waiting for me to deliver it. I can also clearly remember jokes, slides, research, points that other people have said, and all my prepared content. I can loop back to any questions asked and be certain in my delivery. When you really remember the information, it builds confidence, and you'll look like you know what you're talking about. Presentation power is memory power. You can eliminate the fear of forgetting by using memory methods like the journey, body, car, peg list, drawing your own pictures, or making mind maps. Take charge and control of your content, because without notes, you'll look more professional in your delivery. When you present with the memory methods, it's like you're reading from a teleprompter. You're not learning the information word for word, but you're clearly remembering the structure. If you don't move an audience, you're not managing your content correctly. Great presenters know that audiences tend to remember the first and last bits of the presentation. Therefore, they make their introduction and conclusion powerful and outstanding. They make their introductions more outstanding by opening with a memorable demonstration, question, fact, quote, or a meaningful story. They also continually link information to the audience, making it more outstanding and keep repeating the main points. You can design your presentation with this floor principle in mind. In a presentation, we tend to remember F, first things, L, last things, O, outstanding information, O, own links, and R, repeated information. If you use this principle, you'll get your audience to remember more, making your presentation more enjoyable. If you have a clear structure installed in your head, it'll be easier to move your audience. You'll look more confident, and you'll be a much more powerful presenter. Our third part, called Absent Minds, Anonymous said, is the object lost or are you lost? Have you ever had this experience? You're sitting in your room and you think, I'm going to make chicken for dinner. You then walk to the kitchen and when you get there you think, what am I doing here? You may even open the refrigerator door thinking the refrigerator will provide you with your answer. Or have you ever parked your car and you can't find it when you get back? Have you ever wondered if you've taken your vitamins or other medication? And don't you just hate it when you put your car keys down and when you need them, you can't find them? If any of this has ever happened to you, then you are normal. Yeah, normal. This all happens because familiarity breeds forgetfulness. All of our routines sometimes create a state of autopilot, and we often don't attend to what we're doing. The good news is that 95% of the time you're not absent-minded. You remember where you put your car keys, you can find your car again, and you don't put your pants in the fridge. Yet we beat ourselves up for the mistakes we make 5% of the time. If you keep your focus on your absent-minded moments, you're going to create more absent-mindedness. Start to catch your memory doing things right, and you'll start to see improvements. It's been estimated that people squander 40 days annually trying to remember things they've forgotten. People are becoming increasingly absent-minded as they struggle to cope with constant streaming of information from mobile phones, the internet, radio, and television. With all our technology and systems in place, we should be more at peace, but we seem busier and more stressed than ever. As a result, we are regularly misplacing items or forgetting people's names. We are living in an activity illusion and keeping our minds full of busyness. No wonder we're absent-minded. Making excuses for your absent-mindedness doesn't solve anything. So what is the solution? When you put items down, like your car keys, you need to bring yourself back to the present moment. Ask yourself questions like, when am I going to use this next? Or say to yourself, I'm putting the keys on the table. Or you could imagine that your keys are exploding the table. Try anything different to bring yourself back to the moment. Most things in life can be solved with more responsibility and awareness. In Chapter 4, I talked about being all there. When you start to single task instead of trying to do 100 things at once, then you'll start to be more focused. Take action today. Clear the clutter. Get organized. Think on paper. Bruce Sterling said, chaos is the sexiest excuse for laziness ever invented. Creating systems and using habitual places to put your items will save you massive amounts of time. Do yourself a favor and stop trying to get attention for your absent-mindedness. I hear you protesting. Well, why do you tell other people about these incidents if you didn't get attention for it? Decide today to rather bring yourself back to the power of now and pay more attention to the moment. Part 4. Remembering playing cards. Without a method, the average person will only be able to remember about half a pack of cards in 30 minutes, if they're lucky. The average person doesn't have a way of trapping thoughts, so they're never really certain of what they know. With the method that I'm about to teach you, you'll be able to remember a shuffled pack in a few minutes. With the same methods, I've been able to remember a pack in 45 seconds. With a bit of practice, you'll be able to do the same. Remembering cards has many mental benefits. It's a great way to train your memory. It can help you in card games like blackjack and bridge. Plus, it has the added bonus of being a great demonstration of your memory power. Knowing what you've already learned in this book, you now know that to remember something well, you need to bring it to life. So how do you bring cards to life? Well, first, we must create a picture for each card. Each card must have its own identity, so that you can distinguish it from the others and then place it on a long-term placer system. You can associate each card with a person that you know, or you can make all the diamond cards celebrities, all the heart cards your family, spade cards people you work with, and the club cards your friends. That would be one way of organizing it. With the system that I use, you'll need to know the number code system from Chapter 12. The card system works in the same way as with numbers. Only this time, the first letter of each suit will start the name of each card. For example, the three of diamonds will be D for diamonds and three, or M. Add a vowel and you have DAM. All the diamond cards will start with a D, all the hearts will start with an H, etc. And then you just add the converted number to the end of the card. In the audiobook companion document, you can find all the images for all the suits. Once you've created images for each of the cards, you'll have to get to know them. It'll take a bit of time practicing getting the card to automatically turn into the image, but with time, it will become second nature. To remember the whole shuffled pack, you then create a journey of 52 places, and you store each character on the journey, or you can link the cards together. These methods are not tricks, you're just using the memory fundamentals and therefore maximizing more of your memory potential. This is Memory Gym. The more you work with it, the more your overall memory will improve. It's a way to practice your memory skills. I know many people are not going to put any effort into remembering cards, but at least now you know how. This is just another example of how these methods can be applied to solve any memory problem. Part 5. Studying anything. Learning new information isn't helpful unless it can be recalled later. Anything that increases one's memory power increases access to everything learned. That's a quote from Richard Restack, M.D. There is no learning without memory. The more you can enhance your memory, the better you'll be able to learn. In every course, there's some theory that needs to be remembered. The quicker you can get the theory down, the more time you can spend on practicing the information. Many of the first and second year university subjects are mostly memory-based. If you have a strong memory system in place, you'll succeed in anything that you choose to study. There are a few things you should consider to enhance your performance in your area of study. First, never learn just to pass an exam. What's the purpose of doing well in an exam and not knowing what you've learned 2 weeks later? Learning's not a destination. It is a continuous process. All the A students that I've ever interviewed prepare and plan their learning. They do little bits over time and don't stress before an exam, because all the hard work has already been done. All the F students overdose on energy drinks the night before and stress their way through the information, hoping it'll stick for the exam. So break your learning down and master the material over time. Before you study anything, make sure you have a strong pick. Remember purpose, interest, and curiosity? Make sure you have that in mind. Review Chapter 4 to get more details on the pick principle. Your vision will determine how much energy you'll have for your learning and how hard you'll be willing to work. When studying, it's also important to take breaks, as our mind can remain focused for only so long before we become unproductive and tense. When you return from a break, you will feel refreshed and do more work in less time. Every 35 to 40 minutes, take a break. Take a walk and get away from whatever you're working on and give your mind a rest. Get an overview and analyze the material that you have to cover. Mark out all the areas that you need to remember. In any subject, the same concepts keep coming up, so make images for these key concepts and create an image vocabulary. This is so that you don't have to keep on finding images for information that you've already created. Then create a memory system that will work for each section and store the information. Record your systems and go through them a few times to make sure you have all the content in your head. I've had students that have used one shopping center to remember their entire syllabus. Using the methods shared in this book, you'll never have the experience of not being able to get information into your head again. No matter what information you need to learn, these methods can be adapted so that you can find a solution and make the information sticky. I've helped thousands of people to learn all kinds of material for school and university. I've helped medical students, law students, pilots, policemen, nurses, medical reps, miners, ornithologists, marketers, and engineers. There isn't an area of study that won't benefit from these methods. These methods have no limits. The only limits are the excuses and judgments that you may place on them with your whining mind. Some people say, "I'm not creative and I don't make pictures." Well, when I hear people say that to me, all I hear is, "I'm too lazy to put in the effort." If you choose to believe in limits, you'll live a limited life. Part 3. Continuous Use. We start that with a quote from Dennis Waitley. Habits begin as offhanded remarks, ideas, and images. And then, layer upon layer, through practice, they grow from cobwebs into cables that shackle or strengthen our lives. Chapter 15 is called Self-Discipline. And here's another quote for you from Mark Spitz. He won 7 gold medals in the 1972 Olympics. "We all love to win. But how many people love to train? There's never ever been an undisciplined world champion. Our rewards are always directly proportional to our efforts. It sometimes takes years of training to develop abilities in the area in which we'd like to achieve success. People say, "That person has such talent." But they never look down the road to see how many hours have been spent training. If you want to master the skills that you have learned in this book, or if you want to master anything, you need self-discipline. Self-discipline is not self-deprivation. It's about raising your standards and going for and being more. Many people think that things are going to magically appear in their lives. Think about it. People want beautiful, healthy teeth, but they don't have the self-discipline to floss them. Is it expensive? Does it take a lot of time? Is it difficult to do? It's none of these. How can they expect to change any area of their lives if they can't even bring themselves to do that? So why don't people floss? I once read an article on CNN.com that stated, up to 59% of glaucoma patients regularly skip their eye drops, even though untreated glaucoma can lead to blindness. If you have glaucoma, you're going to lose your eyesight if you don't use your drops. Why don't people do it? People simply don't do it because they think that the future will be a better place than today without doing anything to make it better. What do you want? What are you doing daily? If your daily actions are not moving you in the direction of what you want, then you'll never get what you want. Common sense, isn't it? It's not that your goals are physically impossible. It's more that you lack the self-discipline to stick to them. There are four keys to creating more self-discipline in your life. And the first one is, create a vision. Your inner vision and your energy are connected. If you wake up in the morning and focus on all the bad things that could possibly happen in a day, your energy level will be low. If you wake up and imagine all the exciting possibilities and focus on all the great things that you get to do, your energy level lifts. Where your attention goes, your energy flows. David Campbell said, discipline is remembering what you want. The more reasons you have to do something, the better your inner movie will be, and therefore the more energy you'll create to do it. If your excuses are high and your reasons are low, you'll have no discipline to start. If your reasons are high and your excuses are low, you'll have lots of motives, and motives and action create motivation. Always ask yourself, how badly do I want it? If you really, really want it, you'll create a strong vision and you'll have the self-discipline to do it. Part 2. Make a decision. All change happens only when you make a true decision to change. When you make a true decision, you'll not allow for any other possibility. Make a commitment to yourself that this is the way that you're going to live your life. For anything to happen in your life, you have to schedule it. Decide to make it part of your routine. Part 3. Stop listening to your feelings. Albert Hubbard said, self-discipline is the ability to make yourself do what you should do, when you should do it, whether you feel like it or not. When people want to start a task that they have to complete and say something like, I'll do this tomorrow, a loop closes in their mind and they're happy to continue without doing it, because they'll do it tomorrow. The problem is that when tomorrow comes, the same loop just repeats itself. Or if you say, I just don't feel like it, a loop closes because you've tricked yourself into thinking that you'll do it when you do feel like it. These pictures and voices that we control create our feelings. If you want emotional mastery, learn to take control of these pictures, movies, and voices that you run in your mind. Some people will say, I have to listen to my inner voice because it guides my intuition. Listen to your intuition or feelings when you're deciding to pass a truck on a busy road, making a massive decision, or whether you should climb into an elevator with a freaky-looking guy. But when you're following a discipline, these feelings only get in the way. If you have to floss your teeth, you don't have to consult your intuition. Just do it. When you have to exercise, you don't have to listen to your feelings. Just do it. William James said, the more we struggle and debate, the more we reconsider and delay, the less likely we are to act. Schedule a time in the day for memory training and practice, whether you feel like it or not. And part 4, daily action. If you want to develop a habit, then the only way to achieve this is by doing something daily. You have to review your new skill to renew it. Only by consistently practicing your discipline can you turn it into a skill. Most of the research that I've read says it takes 21 days to develop a new habit. In my experience, it takes a lot longer. Some people think that once the 21 days are up, the brain will then take over. Then after 21 days, they give up, waiting for their brain to do the rest. Self-discipline requires you to make a decision daily. Self-discipline requires you to start fresh every day. Every day is a new day. You don't have to practice this skill for the rest of your life. Just for today. I believe that life does not reward idleness. If you put your arm in a sling for a week, you start to lose the use of many of your major muscles. Your brain is made of flesh and blood like the rest of your body. So if you use it, it will improve, and if you don't, you'll lose it. The only way you get good at anything is through self-discipline. Remember, life only rewards action. Chapter 16. Review to Renew. You know as well as I do that it's entirely wrong to assume that any subject matter which we once learned and mastered will remain our mental property forever. That's a quote from Bruno Furst. It's been estimated that 2 years after leaving school, The average person only remembers 3 weeks' worth of lessons. Think about it. In your own life, do you still remember all those theorems? That means that after 12 years, all you have left is 3 weeks. The average person that passes a test today would never pass that same test 4 weeks later. Final exams are really final. In Spitzer's experiment, it was found that the average person who learns textbook material without memory methods remembers only the following. After day one, 54%. After 7 days, 35%. After 14 days, 21%. After 21 days, 19%. After 28 days, 18%. Now this shows that the average student only remembers 18% of their work after a 28-day holiday. That means the lecturer or trainer only has 18% of the knowledge to build new knowledge onto. The average company or student loses 82% of the information, or 82 cents out of every training dollar after 28 days. Any training is a waste of time if there's not a process of review. Many people feel that they can never forget the information that they learned using the memory methods and systems. The memory methods make the learning process fun and more effective. They create such a strong impression, and it's so different to your mind that you have to remember it, and consequently it sticks. The methods help to store the memory quickly for a medium term, but to make sure that the information remains in your mind, you need to review and recite it. The reason we review is to make the information more solid in our minds. The only way we can build on a memory is if we can remember it. Your memory is like a bank. The more you put into it, the more it grows. Review also helps you to create more long-term memories. Repetition or rote learning on its own, without the methods, is no fun. It takes long and can often result in an aversion to learning. Memorizing should be a pleasure. It should be more like a game. Reviewing when using the memory methods doesn't require a lot of time. It's just a process of thinking about it and making sure that the pictures are strong and that you can clearly see them. Then recite any information that you want to stick in your mind. I've found that if you review your information in a specified time frame, you increase recall. If you repeat it after 10 minutes of learning the information, it will remain in your memory for at least an hour. The first review should always be done backwards. Reviewing images backwards helps you to remember them more effectively. If you learn concepts in reverse, you create a new impression in your mind, and this makes information more outstanding. It just seems to make the memory so much stronger. Once you've done this, you review at longer and longer intervals. Review after 1 hour, then 1 day, 3 days, 7 days, 14, 21 days, 28 days, 2 months, 3 months, and then it should be in your memory forever. During the first 72-hour period, the knowledge transfers into a deeper, stronger memory. So if you're using a route or journey system, after the first 72 hours, you'll be able to reuse the journey for new information. However, if you have information that you want to keep forever, rather assign it its own route or system and review it often. Review takes discipline, but it keeps information fresh in your mind. It keeps it alive. It keeps it awake so that you can connect more information to that existing information. The more that you connect to that information, the stronger the information becomes. Your mind is the only computer in the world with this characteristic. The more you put into it, the more it will hold. The perfect way to learn is to make lots of firsts and lasts by having lots of breaks. Make your information outstanding. Make your own links using memory methods. And then you review it to keep it ready in your mind for new learning. No matter how many times you memorize something, you'll have to start over from the beginning if you let yourself forget it. You have to spread out your revision over longer and longer periods of time. If you use it, you'll strengthen the information, and you'll remember it. When you review, it helps you to think more about what you're remembering. By thinking about it, you begin to really understand it, too. It's important to use this information when remembering names. Only if you review them are you going to remember them. If you use the information often, it acts as a review. You either use it or you lose it from your instant recall. You should always use the power of review to put a lid on your learning to prevent your learning from escaping. We've learned that the only way that you improve is to get rid of anything that's preventing you from improving. So we got rid of the blocks to your mind, like excuses, limiting beliefs, and learning to single task, and then we became more willing to learn more. Then we learned how to improve through the C principle of imagination. We've learned the different memory methods, the link story method, memory art, the body and car method, the route or journey method, the PEG system, the number code, and remembering names. These methods are only limited by your own imagination and level of self-discipline. We now also know how to review. Remember to review to renew. Endings are the seeds for beginnings. Dennis Waitley said, "If you're hoping to harvest a life of great deeds, remember you first have to plant some great seeds. You are the choice of all your memories, and remembering is a choice. There's no magic when it comes to memory improvement. There's only management. Memory skills are an important tool in your self-improvement arsenal. I've given you many tools, but remember, batteries are not included. You need to provide the energy to make it work. The information you've received will change your life for the better. Use it. Memory training will enable you to create more certainty with information. Certainty fosters confidence and will give you a glimpse of your amazing ability." Bryce Martin said, "The possibilities of thought training are infinite, its consequences eternal, and yet few take the pains to direct their thinking into channels that will do them good, but instead, leave all to chance. Today, you have two choices. You can take the first option. You can leave it all to chance and do what you've always done, but you'll get what you've always gotten. Or you can take the pains and decide today to take the second option. Do different to become different. Take these tools, make them your own, practice hard, and unleash the power of your memory. May you never forget what's worth remembering, nor ever remember what's best forgotten." That's an old Irish blessing. About the author. For over 25 years, Kevin Horsley has been analyzing the mind and memory and its capacity for brilliance. He's one of only a few people in the world to have received the title International Grandmaster of Memory. He's a World Memory Champion medalist and two-time world record holder for the Everest of Memory Tests. Kevin is also an author of four books and the designer of a times table game with the Serious Games Institute at Northwest University Vol Campus. Kevin is an international professional speaker and assists organizations in improving their learning, motivation, creativity, and thinking. Learn more about Kevin at supermemory.co.za. One last thing. If you enjoyed this book or found it useful, I'd be very grateful if you'd post a short review on Amazon or Audible. Your support really does make a difference, and I read all the reviews personally so I can get your feedback and make this book even better. Thanks again for your support. This has been Unlimited Memory: How to Use Advanced Learning Strategies to Learn Faster, Remember More, and Be More Productive. Written by Grandmaster Kevin Horsley. Copyright 2013-2014 by Kevin Horsley. All rights reserved. Published by TCK Publishing at tckpublishing.com. Narrated by Dan Culhane. Audiobook production by Archangel Inc.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.